Caught Offside with Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside from the Upper West Side of Manhattan. Andrew Gundling and JJ Devaney. What's up, brother?
How are you?
Very good. This is a great way to start off a Monday, start off the week.
Yeah.
I mean, normally you and I at this point, we're just kind of like in the muck of like a Monday morning. But, you know, we thought this weekend was, you know, it was different. There was a cup final. There was Liverpool United in a huge game. There's a lot to talk about from over the weekend. So I kind of like starting the week off this way.
True. There was a lot of drama. Yeah. And it wasn't just at the Oscars. But yeah. There'll be very little, I suppose, trophies given out for some of what happened.
You and I, we're big Oscars watchers, even though we don't see many movies during the year.
We saw a few. I saw Vice.
That's the one I didn't see that really bummed me out that I didn't get to see it this year.
Yeah. I need to see Roma. I obviously need to see Green Book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Roma's very, very easy to watch. Right, you have Netflix. I mean, that's super easy to just watch that.
I need to see The Favourite with Olivia Colman because she's a peep show, basically my favourite comedy of all time. One of my favorite, top three anyway. It won an Oscar vicariously through her.
Well, and she also, the show that I literally, that I just recommended last week, The Night Manager, she's one of the main characters in that too.
She's great.
Yeah.
She's really, really good.
I wasn't even really that aware of her until I was watching The Night Manager. Yeah, it was always eventful. One thing that with movies now, and this is another one of those things.
Until you have a child. You do not understand.
I'm going back now because when we were kids, you watched the Disney movies, Lion King, Aladdin, all that stuff, but you only see it as like through kids' eyes. Now Jack is hitting that age where he can watch those movies. We're starting to move out of like annoying kid television and into watching Disney movies. And I'll tell you one thing. I am rediscovering how unbelievable these movies are. I genuinely, like, even when he's taking a nap, if we're watching the movie and he's now fallen asleep next to me, I will not turn it off. I will continue watching.
Can I shock you? Never seen The Lion King.
Oh, JJ, we got to sit down and we got to hammer it out.
Are we going to watch the new one or the old one?
All of them. Oh, and maybe we'll go to a Broadway show together.
Oh.
I just watched Coco, which came out, I think, last year. The music, it's unbelievable.
I'm not
the music, it's like, I'm going to start putting them on my phone.
I'm not a singing and dancing guy. The last bit of theater I saw, and I work in Manhattan, like bang in the middle of it, was in November, Aaron Sorkin's To Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, wow.
Which was very good.
Yeah, very
but I can't be doing with singing, jazz hands, none of that.
Jazz hands? That's what you think is happening in Moana and The Lion King and
unnecessary singing and choreographed dance. No need.
I feel like at some point if I went back and listened to old podcasts,
men
I could
women,
find that you were being a hypocrite in some way.
Men but and women
of
dressed
theater,
as cats.
There was
unnecessary.
High theater yesterday at Wembley. I guess it makes sense almost because not a ton happened in this game. I know not all nil-nils are created equal, but this was kind of like your classic cup final nil-nil.
You had the elbow on Jorginho or on Aguero by Jorginho. You had a couple of goal mouth scrambles. City could have scored equally. Chelsea were compact and tight, but it wasn't a good game.
Yeah, the only thing. Well, we'll get to kind of some of the byproducts later, but I think we have to start with what really the whole soccer world is kind of talking about, and that was the theatrics, the histrionics, everything that went on between Maurizio Sarri and Kepa Arrizabalaga right before penalties, late in extra time of yesterday's game. For anyone who doesn't know. Arrizabalaga had been dealing with some kind of injury, it appeared. The medical staff came out onto the field to treat him in some way. Willy Caballero, who had been warming up even previous to that,
suggesting there was going to be a substitution regardless.
Right. Was then essentially subbed in until Kepa said no, and he said it in just the most emphatic, boisterous way imaginable, and it could really have only been read one way. And that was he was clearly showing up his manager. You can have any number of opinions as to whether or not the decision from Sarri was right or wrong, but I haven't heard anyone dispute the fact that Kepa was completely embarrassing his manager. And it was honestly a sight that, I don't know, I've been trying to think in my head of like other moments. I'm not saying it's the only time something like that has ever happened, but in a cup final, like on that kind of stage, heading into penalties, it was so bizarre.
It was embarrassing. And Sarri had a full meltdown. He ripped his tracksuit top. He went down the tunnel until he thought better of it and came back up. And yet this was all supposed to be a misunderstanding.
It was a man unhinged is what we were witnessing.
Yeah. If he had lit up a cigarette on the sideline, I wouldn't have been shocked. And just said, do what you want. He screamed at Gianfranco Zola. Has Gianfranco Zola ever looked more lost and innocent for a man who, you know, the innocent look was pretty much his look, his face throughout his career?
In fairness to Zola, though, that look was repeated on the faces of everyone on the field.
Yeah.
Like, David Luiz went over to talk to Kepa, and he had the same look on his face. Like, what are you doing, man? He's subbing you out.
The lack of backing for the manager on the field, though, that there was no strong captain-style presence amongst the ranks of every single Chelsea player to go and talk to him and say, get off, was an indicator of exactly what's wrong with that club. Now, can I give you some insight?
Mm-hmm.
Goalkeepers hate being taken off for penalty kicks. It doesn't matter if they've worked on it before and it's agreed policy. They hate it. The Irish Cup final in 2011, Brendan Clarke came off for Sligo Rovers and on came a specialist spot kick guy who saved him, and he saved three or four. So it was vindicated.
Right.
Clark never forgot it. Came back to Sligo Rovers as a St. Pat's player last season. It's 0-0 in the 89th minute or whatever. Who's taking the penalty? Clark comes up the field to take the penalty. So they don't like it and they won't forget it. And my take on it is that Kepa saw the opportunity with a weak manager. He thought, I'm not going off. Now, he'd been struggling with a hamstring. He missed the Malmo game to make sure he could play in the Carabao Cup final. Mm-hmm. It was not unreasonable for him to be actually injured. He said he was fine. I believe he was fine. I do believe that part. But he saw the opportunity to stay on the field, and he took it. He saw a weak manager. He saw a weak sideline. He thought, what are they going to do? Short of coming on the field and dragging me off, he looked at the 10 men in front of him and saw none of them was going to do anything, such as the mess this club is in off the, on the field. And he just stuck to his guns.
Mm-hmm.
So he could be the guy who saved the penalty.
And there's a huge amount of ego involved, obviously.
Enormous.
Not just the image of a keeper coming off. Like, in any situation, I could understand a keeper kind of, like, feeling bad about that. But he also, at the wages that he's on, with what Chelsea paid for him, I'm sure he feels a certain amount of pressure himself to be the man for that club.
Now, if I said to you, me and you are manager of Chelsea, Sarri's gone, it's me and you on the sideline, and I said, look, we've got a goalkeeper who spent years at Manchester City, knows the penalty, or most of the penalty kick takers relatively well. He's a guy that gives us that edge, and we agree to do this. That is not an unreasonable thing to do.
Of course not.
But you're
how many times do we see it with Tim Krul at the Netherlands?
Yeah, so
in incredibly high stakes moments in the World Cup.
Right. So I refuse to believe that that Chelsea hadn't planned to use Caballero, and the opportunity for Kepa to go rogue was there, and he took it. Now, can I give you David Priest's take?
Of course. Very valued.
There's no great need to go into too much detail over Kepa. Too late, David. If Sarri thought he was injured but Kepa was fit enough to continue, he was right to stay on. If it was a tactical decision with a view to penalties, then his manager should have been stronger and hauled him off. I think that is the correct take, but he emasculated Sarri.
It was hard to watch.
It was really...
Let me read for you what Kepa said afterwards. He says, quote, I understand that on television, on social media, they're talking about this, but I'm here to explain it, to say that it wasn't my intention to go against the manager. We have spoken now, and I was only trying to say I'm fine. He thought I wasn't fine. It was intense moments with a lot happening. In no moment was it my intention to disobey or anything like that with the boss. Do you accept that explanation from Kepa?
Not really.
Okay.
He's a professional goalkeeper. He's played for all of his life. He knows what refusing to come off at the manager's instruction will do. He knows that.
Yeah.
There's no misunderstanding here. What there is a man fudging his response afterwards, covering up, and his manager, unfortunately, doing the same.
I know.
I realised after, said Sarri, when the doctor arrived, I have talked to him, but only to clarify, because now I have understood the situation. It was a big misunderstanding, because I understood the keeper had cramp and was unable to go to penalties, but it was not cramp, and he could go to penalties. I needed to return down the tunnel to be quiet. I'm just going to go get a bit of quiet down the tunnel, guys. Be back in a mo. He stormed down the tunnel and then had a moment of clarity, thought, I'm just making this worse, and returned. He ripped. He was freaking out. Like, there's no way.
You know, I don't know.
It's just such bollocks.
Yeah. I don't know what this says about me. I'm not typically someone who believes in the idea of cutting off your nose to spite your face. But you're Maurizio Sarri. And everything that's been going on around him and Chelsea, like, this is not happening in a vacuum. His comments about not being able to motivate players, the thought of him, like, on borrowed time as manager of Chelsea,
right.
That's all part of what's happening here.
Of course.
You can't factor that out. So if I'm him, and I'm pretty sure I'm not making it out of this season intact, the only thing he has left to salvage is his dignity. So let's say that Kepa was, in fact, totally fine. And you go off of what David Priest says, and the right thing to do if Kep is not injured is to leave him out on the field.
Sure.
If I'm sorry, and I know all this, if I hear Kepa scream at me, no, I'm fine, and he's making this gigantic scene, and it's embarrassing me, I would only feel more emboldened. It's, oh, you're fine? Okay, then you can run off the field now. Sprint to the locker room. Like, I would be so angry at him making that kind of scene, yeah, and embarrassing me, because now you're right. Who looks more pathetic here?
Oh.
Like Kepa looked terrible in this display of petulance,
yeah,
but Sarri looks so weak. Like, what club is he going to go to now where he'll be respected by that team? Everyone in the world has seen this video of a player completely, like you say, emasculating him. So I would have screamed at Kepa, okay, you're fine. Then I'm even angrier now, and you can sprint to that locker room. I don't ever want to see your face again. Now, cooler heads will prevail eventually. Like, I saw Chris Sutton. He described the situation as a mutiny at Chelsea and said that Kepa should never play for the club again. Now, I'm not going to go that far, but I think Sarri had no choice yesterday. If he had to run out there himself, I would have even said, you know, so Caballero's number appeared for the substitution to be made, and then it was canceled. If Kepa refused to come off, I would have said to the official, we're going to penalties, so a red card means nothing at this point. You can substitute Caballero in for someone else, I guess, and just hope that penalties don't go that long to 10 or 11 guys. But I would have said, you red card him then. Refusing to come off the field for time wasting, you give him a red card for something. I want him off this field. I would have just gone ballistic.
Andrew, I would have stood Caballero on the line until Kepa came off. However embarrassing that might have been, which it would have been, I would have waited it out and made sure that little came off. Like, honestly.
Yeah. And, like, there are some people today, like, I'm not really seeing much of this. I do give people credit. It's been pretty much unanimous. But there is this whole idea of, like, you know, there's a lot of outrage being directed at Kepa over this. And I say justifiably so. But there is this kind of idea of, like, look, he didn't kill anyone. He hasn't broken a law. Like, we let players off the hook for you know, way worse offenses than this. So everyone just, like, cut him a break. He was a guy in the heat of a moment. Look, you're right. He didn't break a law. But, like, within sports law, this is a, like, can you think of a much greater offense than completely embarrassing a manager? Like, short of, like, hitting, like, punching a referee, something like that. Like,
I'm struggling. I'm really struggling to openly defy your manager in full view of the cameras and a stadium full of people. When you talk about sports law, there is not much worse than that.
Yeah.
There really isn't. I suppose, I mean, we hear about training ground bust-ups, but that's in private, and it can be managed.
And that it's also, it's, like, I don't want to call
for
it
the course,
common,
but it's people have arguments in work every day, yeah, and that's really no different.
Publicly embarrassing your manager in a cup final at Wembley. Like,
it's up there. It might be number one.
Like, none of these guys come back from that. This is like the first line on their Wikipedia pages for the rest of time.
Although they changed Kepa's Wikipedia page.
Oh, really?
To manager of Chelsea. They did. So they were on it quickly.
I mentioned the Chris Sutton comment there. Where do you, like, is he going a little too far in the outrage department?
Well, Chris loves a bit of outrage, let's be honest. Oh. And I don't disagree with him. Probably back in the day, it would have been it. He would have been sent to the reserves, and then they get rid of him. But it's
what
not.
Did they pay $71 million?
Yeah, that's
for him?
Not. But that's not happening. It's also not happening. Ian Ladyman on Twitter made the point that this is just symptomatic of Chelsea, with a culture of replacing managers so quickly. All Kepa needs to do is wait it out. By the way, the manager is already covered for him now. I would imagine Kepa starts the next game for Chelsea. I do think so. I can't.
If you're sorry,
like, sorry can't. Sorry has now gone in front in rather impressive fashion, according to a lot of the journalists, and stonewalled on this. Basically, he said, well, what are you talking about? No big deal.
Well, he...
Move on. You know?
Right, right.
And he's already covered for his goalkeeper.
Sort of. He did leave himself that little bit of wiggle room in saying that... Because remember, he had... Who was our guy that we played the Justin Bieber thing to? The voice of that whole sorry press conference?
Oh, that was the media guy. Press media officer. Relations officer.
Right. If you saw, there was that moment in Sarri's press conference afterwards where he couldn't quite figure out the right way to say it, so he deferred to the press officer who kind of said for him that Kepa was right, but he didn't go about it in the right way. In saying that, I do think Sarri leaves himself just enough room where if he wanted to suspend Arrizabalaga for a match, he could do it. And I think people could look, and he could point to that explanation saying, look, he may have been right, but the way he went about it was unprofessional.
Sorry.
We're about here at Chelsea, and he needs to pay some sort of price.
Sorry, and I feel terrible for him, is day to day.
Yeah.
He's waking up every morning, and he's wondering, will I get a phone call? Will there be a trip to the office?
I think he's almost, I think he'd almost embrace it at this point.
Oh, no, he sounds like a man that wants out.
Do you think if he, like, so he's going down the tunnel. He's at the door. Do you think if he goes through that door, that's it? We never see him again?
Like, Andrew, if he goes through that door and takes a few more steps, he goes out into the car park. He drives to the local off license. He gets a bottle of vodka. He turns on Tom Petty. And I'm free falling. And he just drives off.
Middle fingers out the window.
Middle fingers out the window. And he drives all the way back to Empoli. Seriously. Done. The phone rings. It's Bruce Buck. Beep, beep, beep. As he throws it out into the river. It's She's so a good girl. And the wind blowing in what's left of his hair. And then he just fumbles a little bit on the seat. And he finds the pack of cigarettes. And he takes a long draw. Finn. Movie ends.
It really was amazing. I mean, it was like such incredible drama to watch that all play out. I guess we can kind of move off of it and ask the question, if all of this drama actually covered up the fact, like Pep afterwards was very complimentary. He talked about the resolve that Chelsea showed. Like, did all of this in some way obscure the fact that only a couple weeks removed from a 6-0 thrashing at the hands of Manchester City, that Chelsea kind of did themselves right in this one?
Andrew, every panel show on Sky, BT, they sit down and they begin like this. So, Maurizio Sarri, can we expect him to change his tactics?
Well, I think Sarri's got to change his tactics with Jorginho's no working out, you know?
Every single one on repeat. And he does change his tactics. He packs the midfield. He drops the high press. He sits in more of a low block and looks to play on the break. And towards the end of the game, Hazard was finding acres in behind Manchester City. They did tweak. They did change. This should be about Sarri's flexibility. Should it? You know, I mean, that was pretty good. No. It's completely overshadowed by the brat between the sticks.
Yeah.
That's just it.
I know.
It's and that's another reason why, you know, he should just go. Just go now.
Yeah.
There's nothing else you can do. Everything has been thwarted.
Yeah. By the way, Manchester City also participated in this game. Their quest for 4 trophies is alive and well-ish.
Yes.
Because this they got their trophy, but it came at a cost. We've talked on many podcasts about Fernandinho's importance to the team. He got hurt. We've talked even at times about, not to say that there's a weakness necessarily on Manchester City, but if there is, sometimes you look at their back line.
Sure.
Well, they lost Aymeric Laporte to an injury. These are two really important players. Pep said after the match that both of those guys will be out for, quote, some weeks, which is incredibly broad, but it comes at a bad time for them. Not that there's ever a good time, but look at the jumble of fixtures here. And keep in mind the dates, not even necessarily the opponents, but when these all fall. February 27th versus West Ham, then a quick turnaround to March 2nd at Bournemouth. Then they have a week for March 9th against Watford. Then just a few days for their Champions League second leg against Schalke on March 12th.
3 days, which is with travel and everything, is a day and a half or two.
Yeah, and then another quick turnaround at Swansea for the FA Cup. And then they do have a bit of an extended break, 2 weeks before they are at Fulham.
Well, they're at home to Schalke. I should take that back, but still, 2 days.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, Schalke's a home, is the yeah. home leg.
Look, you're
there's
right.
There's a lot going on there. And
there's nothing to fear from on paper from in terms of opposition, but you're right. That is a clutter of games coming quick and fast. And the thing about Fernandinho was he was crying and clutching his groin. Mm. Now, the hamstring, I still say, is the trickiest of all the muscular injuries from the proper football man's perspective. But the groin is, you can't strap it up. Whatever you can do to tweak a calf or maybe a hamstring that's not quite right, although we'll get on to Jesse Lingard later, yeah. You can't do anything with the groin, or not much. I mean, injections, I guess they won't want to do that with a 33, 34-year-old player. It's a big blow. Now, the stats tell us they've won in the past without him, but like you said, the games are coming thick and fast.
Yeah.
City have the squad to absorb this. They absolutely do. But it might see some tweaks, some interesting tweaks from Pep, and I'd be interested to know what he will do in that with that holding midfield role.
Well, they can absorb it. You're absolutely right. But here's the thing, and we'll talk about Liverpool in just a sec, but they are, like, the title challenge now we're seeing, it's just on the finest of lines. Mm. So, yeah, okay, none of these teams that they're playing domestically really scare you. West Ham, Bournemouth, Watford, and Fulham. But, like, we're in a situation now where any sort of slip-up could impact what winds up happening ultimately with this. Like, we just saw Tottenham lose to Burnley over the weekend, a thing you wouldn't expect to see. Now, City aren't Tottenham, certainly. They're superior to that on the field. But, like, who's to say that a 2-2 against West Ham couldn't occur if Fernandinho's not there shielding the back line with Laporte out? Like, yeah, so...
Or some kind of disaster away at Bournemouth. We've
right,
seen City yeah. struggle...
And we've seen Bournemouth play up to their opposition at times this season, what they did to Chelsea
Watford
a few weeks ago.
Come and be resolute and nick a yeah. draw, something like that.
I mean,
that.
I know that's not till March 9th, but Watford are in great form going off of what we saw late
No,
last
you're
week.
Right. You're right.
So We're, it's going to be, it'll be interesting.
As I sit here, I still see Pep having the tools necessary to absorb this. But
you're right.
But can he win? How about this? Can he win in Europe without Fernandinho?
Well, the fact that they... Boy, that comeback against Schalke. Can you imagine if we were heading into that and it was still that 2-1 scoreline that it looked like we were headed towards before those two goals for City? It completely changes your entire perception of that one. So we move off of the Carabao Cup, I guess, for another year. JJ, we put this to rest. Yep, never hear that sound
you
again.
You won't miss it. The people love it. You hate that noise.
I mean, I don't know how anyone can love it, to be honest. It's a sound. You can find it funny. But you can't love that noise.
I literally pull out the GIF every time. There is one GIF of a Carabao in the wild.
Yeah.
And that's what I use.
For when that...
For whenever we're talking
we're
about this tournament.
Let's see. Let's move from the Carabao Cup to the Premier League. And we begin with the biggest match of the weekend. Manchester United and Liverpool at Old Trafford. It ends 0-0. The amount of hype for this one. I mean, Manchester City-Chelsea is a really good cup final. And the hype for Liverpool United in February in the Premier League, I thought, dwarfed City-Chelsea.
Somebody on Twitter, who I can't remember it was, I don't think it was anyone of like high journalistic importance or somebody we know, but it was mentioned as by a foreigner, someone who's outside of England, calling it the English Clásico. It was a huge game, though. And it came from the fact they're hated rivals. United are on a run. Liverpool are shaky in the title race. Mm-hmm. It had all the elements. And like we said, we did say it was a bigger game
yeah.
than the League Cup final. And it was poor.
And you know, it's funny because it felt like a cup final. You could look at the 0-0 scoreline, which we see a lot of times, like the cup final that we saw later in the day. And in terms of like the way both teams came out early on, guys were tense. Like you could clearly see it. Ashley Young with that back pass to De Gea, which nearly resulted in a really early disaster for United.
But you're right, because look at how Liverpool took the free kick. Quickly, jittery,
yeah.
made a mess of it.
Yep.
Everyone was wound up. It was tense. It was tight. What was also tight was many muscles.
Yes.
Way too tight.
Yeah, and unfortunately for a game of such hype, it's sad that the lasting memory of it will be injuries.
Yeah.
Lots and lots of injuries. I mean, there were no goals. There was just one shot on target for... Liverpool. United had just three. This is remembered for all the injuries that we saw. Mata, Herrera, Lingard, who would come on as an injury replacement sub.
Madness.
Marcus Rashford,
Madness.
Who played through it, which I will talk about more later in this podcast. And then for Liverpool, they lose Roberto Firmino, who is proven to be maybe their most important player. I don't know if you'd say he's their best player, But we'll find out what they are without him if he's out for an extended period. I mean, this was – you watched that first half, you couldn't believe what you were seeing.
There was more injuries than a season of Game of Thrones. Everyone was falling.
I mean, fortunately, the severity of the injuries were
One got torched by a dragon, Andrew.
Or, like, had their throat slit.
Imagine Lingard coming up. That's the hamstring recurrence of the injury. And a dragon is burning him for not bending the knee.
Straight to the wall.
Yeah, it was incredible. And just to your point about Firmino, let me talk about Liverpool's performance, which has left their fans. It's not the point. A point at Old Trafford is still okay. We're top. We're even on games. It was the game in hand. It's not a disaster from that sense. The performance was dreadful and so flat. And when Firmino was taken off, Andrew, I would have brought Shaqiri on and gone two at the top with Salah and Mane. Because bringing on Daniel Sturridge is not a like-for-like swap. And it's also isolating a pretty turgid midfield. Mm-hmm. That midfield cannot link with that forward line right now in any real creative fashion. So Firmino drops off, picks the ball up, and he does the 1-2s around the box. He links the play. Once he was gone, Sturridge isn't doing that. He's not able to.
Right.
Disastrous from a creative point of view. The other thing was, you look at the stats, or watch a game, Trent Alexander-Arnold, his ability to progress the ball is huge for Liverpool. He wasn't there. Milner was there, who is again doing a fill-in job because Klopp didn't admit it. He was worried about what United could do on that side with Paul Pogba. But we missed Trent Alexander-Arnold, who played a full 90 last week. I think that was a mistake. Liverpool were a wasteland. There was nothing. That front three, everyone's saying, well, they're not clicking. There is no support from midfield. Graham Souness made the point on Sky, which needs to be advanced. 6 goals from midfield all season. That is not going to cut it. There's too much reliance on that front three. There's no out-and-out number 10 to link the whole thing together.
Right. Yeah, they're not getting from Naby Keita whatever it is they thought they'd be getting.
No,
Fabinho is not, he's just not that guy.
No, there needs to be someone ahead of those guys who bring it all together.
Yeah.
You know, they need the rug.
Yeah.
From, what's that film where the rug really brings the room together. That's,
I don't know.
Oh, that's the Big Lebowski.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh, I've seen that many times too.
They need a big player in that position to bring it all together. And, you know, people were talking about Coutinho. Firmino can do that. But that midfield, some of their best attacks was Joel Matip driving through.
Oh my God, I know.
Right?
When I saw it, I was like, wait, who was that guy?
Well, it wasn't happening ahead of him. There was nothing on. I should give Lindelof et al. Their credit. United were good. They defended well in that sense. And honestly, United create the best chances of the game.
This was from Nick Miller on ESPN FC. He wrote after the match, it wasn't just that Liverpool couldn't break through. United defended very well, and we always hear how tough it is to play against sides that dig in when under pressure. It was more that they didn't even come close to breaking through, that they didn't know how to, or worse, didn't want to.
The want to would apply maybe to one side of the field, certainly. Didn't know how to was the big thing. And I really do feel, what have you to lose by going two up front and putting Shaqiri in?
Or at least move Salah maybe to the middle. Yeah, bring in Shaqiri to play out wide and move Salah. If you want to keep your three up front, move Mo Salah to the middle rather than keeping him out wide. I don't know.
Because that's a good point. Honestly, they weren't making any headway. It just seemed there was such a disconnect between that midfield, and they had plenty of the ball. They didn't do anything with it. And honestly, the most creative bit of football we saw was when Lukaku slid Lingard in and Alisson made a brilliant save.
Yeah.
United could have won that game.
I wanted to go a little bit deeper on Mohamed Salah. Now, look, he's tied for the league lead in goals right now. He's got 17 goals this season. So it's hard to sit here and really criticize him. But you look at yesterday's game, they lose Firmino. And, okay, you can talk about Klopp maybe not then adjusting the right way and moving Salah into a position where he'd be more effective. But the fact of the matter is Salah is still on the field. We view him as their best player, and he did not step up and act like their best player. After the 8th minute, these stats come from Sky Sports, after the 8th minute, Salah never had a touch closer than 15 yards out. A touch, not a shot or anything like that. He didn't have a touch closer than 15 out. He completed just 1 of 3 dribbles. And he lost possession with 15 of his 41 touches in the game.
Yeah, he wasn't good.
It was a bad performance.
It was a poor performance. He did an interview in the week leading into the game with Jamie Carragher, which we retweeted from @SeoSoccerPod, because it was good, it was interesting. And Jamie Carragher asked him, what do you consider yourself? Are you a centre forward? Are you a winger? And Andrew, he was so adamant in saying he's a winger. I think he would have been better than rather to play inside in that front three. Maybe push him further out. Let him isolate Luke Shaw one-on-one and try and go past him that way. I think he is struggling a little bit from that lack of... I feel like there's a burden for him to both be creative and to score, and particularly when Firmino wasn't there. He does not link well with Sturridge. He didn't really link well with Mane either. It was a bad outing for him. His goal-scoring record shows you, though, how important he is to the team. But, yeah, certainly Sunday was... Ugh.
I've got one more note from this game. This is one where I honestly don't know how you'll feel about this. Now, like I said, I'm going to talk a little bit more about Marcus Rashford later, but before we move off of him altogether and what he did for United in this game, Michael Owen had a comment about Rashford that was drawing a lot of ire on social media.
I have not heard this.
Okay. Owen said this. They're coming back out. He was on the coverage. And at halftime, as the teams are coming back out, and it was known that Rashford was obviously going to continue, the subs had already been made. Owen said this. I tell you what, if I was Jurgen Klopp in that dressing room at halftime with Manchester United not being able to bring on another substitute, I'd be saying, right, first person, first opportunity, go and kick Rashford on the ankle that he's been limping on. People freaked out on social media when they heard it. Mm. And then Owen doubled down, to his credit, doubled down on Twitter after seeing all this reaction. He then said, hadn't realized there were so many angels here on Twitter. For everyone in uproar over my comments yesterday, get real. As an ex-player, I am employed to give my views and my insights into what happens at football clubs all over the land.
Well, Michael Owen is regularly pilloried for being bland and not saying anything interesting.
Well, not yesterday.
So yesterday, it's definitely happened to him in his career. He was a danger man for both club and country for many years. And a speedster too. So what do you do when you want to stop a speedster? You try and take his legs out from under him. Sorry, when he started playing, that was a tactic.
Yeah, I'm a little bit surprised that people were so horrified by this. Like, this is like, what is it from Casablanca? I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in this establishment. Here's your winnings, sir. Thank you. Like,
yeah, right.
People are surprised to hear that, like, these sort of underhanded tactics. We talk all the time about the dark arts.
When he
like
came
that.
In,
like,
when he came into football, Vinnie Jones was still playing. Mm-hmm. A man who's basically admitted to saying in dressing rooms before the game, who's their best player? Let me isolate him in the first opening 10, 15 minutes when he knows he's safe. He'll only get a yellow card and kick him.
Now, I understand that's different a little bit than knowing Rashford has an ankle injury.
It's the same.
Let's kick that
it's
ankle.
The same level of cynicism. And it's in the game and people shouldn't be shocked by it.
Before we move on, where does this leave Liverpool's title hopes? Obviously, they are a point ahead of Manchester City. Here's Jamie Carragher on Sky Sports talking a little about that.
I think with Liverpool, we keep sort of building this game up and they should have gone and won it. But it's the week. It's not Manchester United, it's the week. And I feel if before this game, if Liverpool get out the end of this week and they're still top of the league in the position they have, whether it's a point, we don't know, City get on their two games, it's a good week. Because this was the week where City's last couple of weeks ago had that big week where Liverpool were looking, thinking, points could be dropped. If you can get through Watford, Everton, then you've got to breathe, no midweek game. If Liverpool are top of the league then, you look at the next two fixtures and then there's the big international break and then it really kicks in. But if Liverpool can get to the end of the week, on March the 4th, the day after Everton game, and the top of the league, they are in a great position to go and win the league.
I got to say...
I would concur with that.
I do too. I am really, almost surprisingly excited for the Liverpool-Everton match because that is Everton's Super Bowl, FA Cup final, World Cup final. That is it. Like, their season has spiraled into a lost cause, and it started that day at Anfield with that insane Divock Origi goal. That kicked Liverpool on into being some people's title favorites.
Right.
What that game will mean to Everton to try to throw some sort of monkey wrench into this Liverpool title push after Liverpool derailed Everton's season, I can't wait. The atmosphere for that, that's going to be a great game.
Is there
game.
Any venue on earth better than Goodison for this game?
It's
right in old school stands, right in on top of the field, Derby. Oh,
I know. Gives you goosebumps thinking about it.
It really does, and I hope it's a belter. I really do hope it's a belter. All prejudices and rivalries and affiliations aside, yeah. I hope it's a belter.
Yep. Let's see, quickly through another couple games that we wanted to mention, Leicester City and Crystal Palace. A couple goals from Wilfried Zaha, 4-1 is the final. Palace over Leicester City at the King Power, and it proves to be the final act for Claude Puel, something that we've been talking about for weeks now, really for years now. He gets a job, and he's instantly on the hot seat.
Yeah.
This 4-1 to Palace proved to be it.
Yeah, I think Claude Puel is struggling in this post 2015-2016 world that Leicester live in, where they've reverted to who they are, which is a solid, good mid-table Premier League team that shouldn't be relegated. Actually, a really nice team at times.
I think they're legitimately good, and I would say that I think they're underachieving.
Right. But if they're headed in the right direction, which I think they are, let me just give you the stats from this one, which this was a battering in scoreline only. Like, Palace had 7 shots, 5 on target. Leicester had 27 shots and 5 on target. Leicester dominated large periods of this game and were capable of scoring. And they outpossessed Crystal Palace 66-34. Possession, not the perfect barometer, I get that.
Yeah.
But they almost had twice as many passes as well.
Well, that comes a little bit with that much of a possession gap.
For example, the Manchester United game at home. Most people would happily say that Leicester could have won that game. Liverpool away, I think they should have won that game. They created the better chances. Leicester have actually been unlucky in a lot of their fixtures. But the thing is, there's an air around the club that they're not willing to countenance this manager's style of play. And the players on the field, it's not open rebellion, but we saw New Year's Day at Goodison Park where they won the game. The amount of times where there was a break in play, where players were going over, and not challenging Puel, but asking him what's going on.
And Vardy are not on the same page.
That is a huge thing.
I think there are holdover players from the title run when they were so beholden to that counter-attacking style.
Yeah.
And they've changed off of that. They're not doing that anymore.
No.
They try to be more possession-based, as you saw, like you just said, in this one. I think there are some players that are maybe just, they're not coming to terms with that.
I'm saddened that they're not writing this out and see where it takes them.
Well,
I mean, they're not.
You're right. They're not going to get relegated.
They're not that far off in many games. What is the point of this now? Firing him mid-season?
Maybe. Look, if there's such a, we don't know what the feeling is in the locker room. It might just be such a negativity over this guy. He's not known for his man management. Like, he's not beloved in that room. You can talk about some of the stats from this one, but I think the stat ultimately that spoke loudest. Leicester have won 70 points in 56 games under Puel in the Premier League. That's 1.25 points per game.
Yeah.
That was fewer than 10 clubs in the Premier League since his appointment, including Palace, Bournemouth, and Burnley. I think Leicester City, look, I'm not saying that they feel they need to be contending for titles like they did that year, but I think they feel they should be at least contending for like that Europa League spot.
If you want to argue that he should be doing better with the quality that he has in Madison, in Didi, Vardy, I can buy that.
Yeah, but people may laugh at this, but I actually think that losing Mark Albrighton was meaningful for them. He's out for the season, just recently had surgery. Like, I think he's a versatile player in defense, on the wing, that, you know, I think they may feel that a little bit. I don't know.
I'm wearied of the manager merry-go-round that is the Premier League, and even in the Championship. It just feels like no one gets any time to build anything anymore at a lot of these clubs, and I often think it would be nice to see what could happen. Maybe sticking by a manager might be a good policy for once. And I would accept that probably the results have obviously put Puel in this position. This is not an aberration in terms of if you have results like that, you are going to get fired. That's the modern-day manager.
Yeah.
I'm just a bit tired of it, really.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we're going to take a very quick break. We'll be right back with a big what to watch for, actually, because we have lots of midweek action in the Premier League, in the CONCACAF Champions League, where your song is just it's rising through the charts rapidly. Man of the match, red card, all that. Don't go anywhere. Back now on Caught Offside. JJ, there was one thing I was thinking about from the Oscars last night. How is there not any category that They Shall Not Grow Old could have been in?
Unbelievable.
Because that's probably... That's
like, they do documentaries, but there was really short ones.
Yeah.
And where was the long form? Why?
I know there was that category.
I saw it come up, and I had seen one of the films in it. Why is there? Maybe there is, and they present it.
I don't don't know.
It's
don't
not
like
on
it.
TV.
I don't like it. And it deserved more.
Are documentaries too controversial to do now?
No, what? We live in a time when controversy is everything. We crave controversy.
I don't know. That really is disappointing. Because in terms of, well, I guess, is it cinematography? I suppose that's what you'd call what they did.
Mm-hmm.
Who beats that?
No, they literally, like, they put you in a time machine.
Right. It's bizarre.
Yeah.
Maybe we've missed something here and we're being unfair to
out of our depth. Criticizing the Academy.
Yeah, and you know what that means.
What did you think of them not having a host? I've been thinking of tinkering with this podcast format. No hosts.
I think a lot of people would like that. Get rid of you.
Utter silence.
No host was okay. I was okay with it.
It was fine. I don't know.
Wasn't it Kimmel last year?
I confuse the years. Yeah. Let's see. What to watch for, JJ? Tuesday, 3 o'clock, Newcastle and Burnley. I'll tell you what. Miguel Almiron looked really, I don't mean to have the surprise tone, like,
I'll tell you what.
Like, I'm patting him on the head. No, he was really good.
I've discovered this player, guys, I want to introduce the world to.
He was really good, nearly scored a goal, probably should have. One-on-one with the keeper, had the little chip.
It was nice
hit the
chip.
Post, and then Rondon hit the post off of that. He drew a red card, and then maybe most importantly of all, because it's good to have the fans on your side, got a standing ovation from the crowd. Rafa Benitez, complimentary of him as well. Good start for Miguel Almiron.
Yep. I thought Yedlin was very good too. He was involved in the two goals. I would do the classic Curb Your Enthusiasm. Having said that, this was Huddersfield. This was 10 men. There were acres of space, and you would expect him to revel in the kind of space that, I mean, Huddersfield provided no attacking threat.
No.
So, yeah, good start. But it was Huddersfield.
Well, important 3 points, though. Like, was Huddersfield, but it is also Newcastle, and they're not immune to the frustrating.
I thought his cameo against Wolves, where he came on as a substitute, was more indicative of the quality of Almiron.
It is funny, though. I don't know why, but when that game was on, like when Newcastle plays, and even when I see like Werder Bremen on FS1, like because of Josh Sargent, or with Newcastle, because of Yedlin, I will lock in, not on the game, but on those guys.
Yeah, right.
I found myself doing that with Almiron as well. Like I do that with American players in games I don't care about. He's not an American player, but for some reason, I don't know, I feel like he is, like MLS has now been set forth out into the world, and like how he performs, it will just mean so much to how the league is viewed.
You're so precious. You're so delicate. I actually focused on Yedlin, and I tweeted. I didn't tweet anything else other than I thought Yedlin was good. He was involved. His first touch for the first goal was very good. Mm-hmm. Well done, Yedlin. I didn't even say well done. I just mentioned Yedlin. The next thing, I'm sucked into a thread about Yedlin won't work in Berhalter's system and that there was loads of space against Huddersfield. Yes, there was, but, I mean,
people have determined that already.
Well, okay. Some people have.
Wednesday, 2:45, Arsenal and Bournemouth. Quietly, very quietly, Arsenal are now back into the top four. Dominated Southampton on Sunday.
Which nobody paid any attention to.
That game was on at an unfortunate time.
It struggled big time. I watched Bournemouth at the weekend. Bournemouth hosting Wolves, which was penalty-a-palooza.
Yeah.
1-1. Entertaining game, lively game.
Could have been, who was it, Josh King missed a penalty?
Scored one, missed one.
Yeah. Yep. Let's see. Wednesday, 3 o'clock. This is probably the one that you'll be circling for your midweek slate.
Well, Chelsea, you'll be circling.
Chelsea and Spurs. Someone is really going to feel bad about themselves when this one's over.
I know. Will it be you?
Recent history will tell you, yeah, probably. Probably.
It's at the bridge, too.
Yeah, Tottenham have typically not fared well there.
Yeah. I wouldn't like to actually call this one, because I'm sure there's a little bit of residuals from the weekend that will impact this game, too. And
boy, Tottenham, they keep getting themselves to the edge, and they just refuse to take that next step. They just can't do it. I don't know what it is.
They got dashed.
Like, they did. In a year where Burnley has not been Burnley. Like, you know, sound defensively. Now, I know
they're a little bit more resurgent now in the last couple of months.
Did you watch any of the Tottenham-Burnley game?
I only saw highlights.
Because there were two refereeing decisions that came under the microscope in this one.
And it was Mike Dean.
Of course it was, obviously. But there was the one that led to Burnley's first goal when they ruled it out of play on Vertonghen. gave Burnley a corner kick.
That was a tough one, even on the replay. I mean, it was definitely gone out on the Burnley player. Right, so it was a goal kick.
That's it.
But you still
we'll sit here and argue for an hour about handballs in the box. That one out on Burnley should be Tommy.
You didn't
but whatever.
Defend the corner well, though, did you?
No, they didn't. And then the one that, like, people want to use this as, okay, we're even now, because Danny Rose took the throw-in 5 yards further upfield than where it should have been.
No, that doesn't work.
So we're going to start, like...
No. Wait.
People
are degrees of wrong. And getting a corner kick off which the opposition scores, getting that decision wrong, and the stealing of yards from a throw-in, which is... Like, there's... I don't even know what the rule is. It's whenever the linesman or referee goes, Oi, back right. a bit. I mean, they're always steps stolen. Yeah. No throw-in ever happens from where it should have.
Burnley fans were booing Danny Rose every time he touched the ball afterwards.
You throw-in thief. Bloody hate you.
I'll tell you what, though. When I saw Harry Kane in the team sheet, I was like, really? Is this necessary? Oh. We've seen this before, but then he goes out, plays. The goal he scored, not his first touch. His second touch was amazing.
Yeah.
Incredible
but
finish.
But we have to see how he's going to respond to that now. I just think with Lingard and Kane, who... I am not having a go at medical professionals. Mm-hmm. I am just saying, what is the rush here?
Especially, too, when you're in the Champions League against Borussia Dortmund, 3-goal advantage or not, I don't care. Like, you got to play your best team for that game. You've got Chelsea midweek, which is more important, I think, than Burnley. I don't know. I was a little bit surprised to see his name on there. Now, they will have a little bit of a break because they're out of the FA Cup, obviously. But yeah, I'm trying to just kind of enjoy Tottenham for what it is right now. They're not going to win the league. They're probably still going to, like, top four is not set in stone, obviously, but I feel good about the 7
points. But you're on a Champions League run now.
Right. Like, enjoy the Champions League. Just enjoy, like, this is a big one against Chelsea. Like,
just enjoy life. Like, enjoy your life as a Spurs fan.
Yeah, I try not to let that Burnley game ruin my day. It ruined several hours afterwards, but you move on because this season kind of is what it is. And, like, try to enjoy this team.
You're not going to have your cheese board
right.
at the new stadium.
And then in
which
title
is
watch,
really, I mean, let's be honest.
You're very fixated on the cheese board. All these stadiums have cheese boards. You just don't know about them. That people are eating cheese in all of these little sweets, JJ.
You have a whole cafe devoted to cheese.
Oh, it's a great
cheese cafe.
I love cheese. I had some brie over the weekend. Oh, my God. I'm a different man than I was 48 hours ago. In title watch, Wednesday at 3 o'clock, both of these Wednesday at 3 o'clock, Liverpool and Watford, and Man City are going to play West Ham, as we mentioned before.
Oh, the stress.
Let's see. By the way, JJ, speaking of Watford, I wanted to mention this. Their fourth goal against Cardiff. The other day, scored by Troy Deeney. It ended a sequence of 26 uninterrupted passes. That was the longest sequence leading to a goal scored by a non-top six team in the competition since September of 2014. Watford, your new Barcelona. How about that? Let's see. CONCACAF Champions League. Here we go. It's our chance for redemption. It's Redemption Tuesday. And with... well, really, not so much. The Dynamo have a 1-0 lead over Guastatoya.
Right.
That's Tuesday at 8. Also Tuesday at 8, here we go. Toronto FC hosting Independiente.
4 goals down.
Yeah.
That is must-watch. I feel that is
a mountain to climb.
Yeah, and you would expect, again,
where you
I'll
go,
say
like a back two? Just like a front eight?
No, but they know this team are capable. They know they've got lively forwards. Independiente can score on them. So they've got this dilemma. You're expected, you need to score 4 goals, but you know these guys can score 2.
Yeah.
What do you do? It's like, it's almost like the speed with Keanu Reeves' version of a game. The bus has to keep at this speed.
But we got to get everybody off of it.
But we got to get everyone off of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what do you do? Who's Michael Bradley? Is he Keanu Reeves?
Yeah.
Who's Sandra Bullock?
Sandra Bullock.
Terrence Boyd?
Terrence Boyd. Okay. Which is
who's, and Dennis Hopper is insert name of Independiente player here.
Player, yeah. The Independiente striker.
Yeah.
Pop quiz.
Let's see. And then Wednesday at 8, the Red Bulls holding a 2-goal advantage over... Pantoja.
Yeah, and that's at Red Bull Arena.
Yeah.
I erroneously said that the first leg was in Newark.
Right. Let's see. Copa del Rey. Don't forget about that. We have a Clásico happening. Second leg, Wednesday, 3 o'clock, Real Madrid and Barcelona heads back to the Bernabeu 1-1. Over the weekend, Messi scored his 50th hat trick.
Ah, oh, what a hat trick.
44 with Barca, 6 with Argentina. helped them to a 4-2 win. That game was closer than that scoreline might indicate.
No, it was a very good game, which has been kind of washed away in the Kepa and the Liverpool Man United. But that of the weekend, that was the best game in Europe.
Yeah, Suarez scored the other one. Boy, did he need it. He'd been in that drought. So, yeah, Barca trailed twice in that one. And then, like I said, beating Sevilla 4-2. Real Madrid won their game 2-1 over Levante. Got a lot of help from VAR. Both Madrid goals were impacted by VAR. One was changed to a penalty on a handball, which Benzema converted. And the other, which I want to talk a little bit about while we have a few minutes here, VAR upheld a call where Casemiro went down in the box. Thought he dove, quite frankly. But they upheld the penalty that was given. Bale converted from the spot. And then proceeded to basically push players away from him in their attempts to celebrate with him.
Oh, dear.
Lucas Vasquez, Bale basically pushed him away. And there's been a lot of talk now about his relationship having just completely crumbled within that club. There was, who was it? Thibaut Courtois, I think, mentioned how a lot of the players will go out to dinner together, but he slipped in there that, unfortunately, it's past Bale's bedtime. There, I think it was Marcelo who was critical of Bale, saying that he's been here 5 years and still doesn't speak Spanish. It feels like Gareth Bale is now the outcast of this club. And you have to wonder, because it's weird, JJ, his name is always involved in transfer rumors, but what you always hear is he doesn't want to leave. Well, if things have gotten so toxic for him, and I don't know if it's fair to read solely into a lack of a celebration on a penalty to say all this, but like when you're hearing other things around it, I think you can have a conversation about, like, is this guy's time at Real Madrid on borrowed time? And I think it is. Like, I know they're paying him wages that maybe other clubs can't, but look, you're Gareth Bale, okay? Let's say you go to Manchester United. You're still going to get massive wages from them. Like, and your quality of life, I would have to believe, will improve tenfold. So at what point, like, money, I know money is everything to a lot of these guys, but it's you've won Champions Leagues. Like, you've achieved almost everything there is to achieve with Real Madrid. Go somewhere and be happy if this is what's, like, really going on.
See, I didn't see this, and just as you're talking there, I was doing a quick bit of reading. The incident offers further evidence. This is from AS. The incident offers further evidence of Bale's increasingly distant relationship with the rest of the squad. He and Toni Kroos were the only players not to attend a recent team meal, while Thibaut Courtois discussed the forward's lack of integration in an interview last week, revealing that he is known in the dressing room as the golfer.
Yeah.
Which is one of those English football man pursuits. They all play golf, and that's their thing, and maybe that's not quite the same in Spain. Also, has he learned Spanish yet, fully?
Well, so
we believe
you
not.
You hear no, but then there are some, like, I have seen him speaking Spanish before, but I guess whatever it is, it's clearly not up to any kind of level where he's near fluent.
That's a massive problem. That would be, for me, a huge problem. Also, in this AS piece, Mijatovic, who scored a winner for in a European Cup final for Real Madrid, blasts him, calls him disgraceful. You don't get the feeling that he's properly annoyed, though. I'd like to see him really angry at not playing and showing Solari that he's desperate to be able to play. Ooh.
Yeah, it's gone. I think it's become toxic for him at that place. And it'll be, once we hit the summer, it'll be really interesting to see where he decides to go. Because I don't know. I mean, he's still a very good player. We saw what he did in the Champions League final. He scored some massive goals for Real Madrid over the years. I still think he can be that level of player. But I don't know how he stays there, and I don't know if that means, like, he'll only go back to England. So what are we talking? I mean, there's really only a few teams in the Premier League that could get him, and Chelsea are now out of that conversation with this transfer ban, which, by the way, makes the Maurizio Sarri thing even funnier, because we were told if he stays, he's going to reshape his team and bring in his kind of guys. Well, now he can't do anything.
Well, he's going to have to recall all the loan signings if he wants to do that.
And are guys still free to leave? Like, Hazard could still go. They just can't sign anyone, right?
Oh, he's out the door.
Right. And, like, Willian. So what's going to happen there? But anyway, you know, United has been rumored with Bale. You know, I don't know if Manchester City could do it.
Or if they'd want him, how would he fit into that system?
I don't know. I mean, you always hear Tottenham mentioned as this club because maybe he has some sort of affinity in his heart for him. I think that's overrated.
Wage cut.
Not right. It will never be. If that's why he stayed at Real Madrid through some bad times in that dressing room, then I don't think he's willing to take that kind of cut to go play at Spurs.
He's had one of the weirdest times ever.
I don't know where he goes.
On one hand, you can say his move to Real Madrid has been a total success.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you can say not total failure, but
you're right. When he does leave there, it's a weird legacy that he leaves behind. Let's see, JJ. We now do this.
Red card.
You want to go?
Yeah, I'll go quickly because we didn't get to mention this. And I just wanted to make a point. I know everybody takes my alternative Champions League song as just a bit of fun and a knock. Well, not everybody, most people.
No, I'm actually pretty hurt by it every time I hear it.
Well, it's a bit of fun and a poke at the weirdness and humour of the CONCACAF Champions League. But I think at times I have come across as disrespectful. Exactly. The CONCACAF Champions League serves almost every year as a palate cleanser for the backslapping we give each other over the health of domestic soccer in the US. Making fun of teams from the domestic leagues of countries that actually qualified for a World Cup can very rightly be construed as being arrogant and lame. Having said that,
there we go.
Everybody's MLS darlings, Atlanta United, lost their first leg tie to Herediano, 10th place in the Costa Rican Premier Division. They lost 3-1, Andrew. Mm-hmm. And they're chasing a lead, which we expect them to chase down on Thursday under Frank de Boer. I just wanted to say is for me.
Were you reprimanded in some way?
No, I was online and I read some stuff on MLSsoccer.com and I read some other articles and the tone was rather disparaging of these countries. And I thought, am I part of the problem here? With my song? And so I thought I would do a mea culpa, apologise, and note that the kind of arrogance that comes from US soccer circles about these teams is not befitting a team that lost 2-1 to Trinidad and Tobago and failed to qualify.
The song is funny, though.
The song is funny, but I talked about, hey, they got out of Guatemala City. Hang on, JJ. The US lost in qualifying in Guatemala.
By the way,
lost.
You also make fun of MLS teams.
Oh, I do. Yeah,
you're lying about why are the Houston Dynamo here?
Yeah, like, I don't know. I don't.
Because they won the U.S. Open Cup.
That's why.
But
right.
Still, though, like, they're not very good. What are they doing in the Champions League?
Tried to balance it.
No, it's funny.
I
understand you got your own little Jiminy Cricket thing going. Your conscience is telling you that look. It's incredibly arrogant. There's no question about it. But, like, that doesn't mean... Sometimes things can still be funny.
Okay.
Let's see. My red card, JJ, I went with Fulham.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, let's pile on. I'm so mad at them, Fulham. I had such high hopes. They lost to West Ham last Friday. This was their 9th consecutive defeat in a London Derby League match. That is the longest ever streak, not in Premier League history, in Football League history.
Which is the proper history we should reference.
Yeah.
Sky Sports, by the way, put up... Not Sky Sports, NBC, put up the Chiron, that is not what they're called, the little band that comes across the bottom. Is that called a...
Okay.
Yeah, whatever. And it said, Liverpool have never won a Premier League. Like, it's just so disingenuous. Like, football started in 1992.
Correct.
Rant over.
Now, I went back and looked, and I think the last time Fulham won a London Derby was last year in the championship against Millwall, I believe. But yeah, they have not... in the 9 matches since. Looking more at not just their recent troubled history, but the present, they've lost 6 of 7. They've conceded a league-high 61 goals. They've yet to win a road game all season. JJ, that's 61 goals that they've conceded. One club in Premier League history has conceded more goals through 27 matches than Fulham. I would ask you, but I don't think you'll get this.
Swindon Town.
No.
Barnsley.
In 97-98. Yeah, bad times, bad times.
Caught offsides, man of the match.
We're going to go to Italy, Andrew. Mm. Christoph Piontek of AC Milan. 7 goals in 6 games for a resurgent AC Milan. It's not even a year since the 23-year-old Pole left Cracovia for Genoa. Believe he was officially started at Genoa on July 1st of 2018. It is only January since AC Milan picked him up, and he has 7 goals in 6 games. He cannot stop scoring. The definition of meteoric rise. Here is the opener he scored for Milan at the weekend against Empoli.
Castillejo. Kessi. Excellent ball in! And Piontek doing what he does best. Invariably, the Pole finds himself in the right spot. It was well crafted. He couldn't miss. And finally, Milan have the breakthrough.
So between Genoa and Milan, I think that's 18 goals for the season. Now, I'm not, again, I'm in the position where I'm disparaging the leagues of smaller nations, but like the Polish league, to come from that and so quickly find your feet in one of the top leagues in Europe, that's incredible.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thought I'd give a little bit of Italian culture there.
Good for Poland, too. Didn't Arkadiusz Milik score over the weekend?
I don't know. Did he?
He did.
Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah, all good. It's all good in the hood. Let's see. My man of the match, Marcus Rashford, JJ. Here's what Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said about him afterwards. He did his ankle straight away. We should have taken him off straight away, but we couldn't. We played with 10.5 men, but Rashford's attitude made up for it. He's a warrior, and he's a mank. He knows what this means. And here's the thing with Rashford. Not just was he a warrior, he wasn't just a spectator in this one either.
No, he chased down balls into the corner.
He did. I mean, you wouldn't, like, there were times, now he was limping.
He was grimacing.
There were times he's making runs where, like, he looked like just another guy on the field. Had a shot on target, had a key pass, had two tackles. By the way, only Luke Shaw and Victor Lindelof had more with three each. I don't know, performances like that against a rival when your team desperately needs you, that's how you build equity with both your own supporters as well as your opposition supporters. It's not often that the football world agrees on much, but I think it was unanimous yesterday that that was a really admirable showing for Marcus Rashford, what he gave to his team in a game that was really, really important for them. If they, if he has to leave and they're now playing with 10 men, I don't think it ends 0-0. And United's, you know, they fell out of the top four even with the draw. Their top four hopes might have taken even more of a hit. That was really important. Now, he might miss the midweek match that they have coming up, but to do that against Liverpool on a stage like that, good job, Marcus Rashford.
Great job by him. It was brilliant. And I don't like to say, oh, it means more because he's from Manchester, but it kind of does. There was no way he was coming off. And he put in a stellar performance. Like, it was one ball going into the corner. I'm like, how is he moving even at that pace?
I know.
With the ankle, it was supposed to be an up like a watermelon. Supposed to be swollen hugely, so well done to him. Oh, I'm hearing music in our ear. We're getting this.
I have mixed feelings about getting played off. Part of me is like, as a person who wants to watch the show and be entertained, and you know people going on and on with their speech, I'm sometimes like, okay, enough already.
Yeah.
But the other part of me is like, this is like their life's work coming to fruition. If they want to talk for a little bit, like, we can all sit here and deal with it. Like, it's not about us in this moment. It's about them.
Oh, it's very much about them. Is there a more pompous night of the year?
Oh, my God, man.
I just want to thank everyone who stood by me, and just for everyone out there that just everyone just realized that my story can be like a shining beacon light in the dark for you and guide you toward just what I've done, which is obviously the most important thing ever.
Right. Like, no, you made a movie. Like,
yeah, you did.
Okay, we enjoyed it. We went to the theater, saw it, and got on with our lives.
And,
like,
and then there's, I laugh at those people. I kind of enjoy the cringeworthy nature of how, you know, nurses, surgeons. Could you imagine if they acted this way?
Yeah, right?
I just saved Mr. Johnson with a heart transplant, and I just want you to know how important that work was to me.
By the way, that would be okay. Like, saving someone's life.
Yeah, but they don't. That's the point.
No. This is more important.
And then you see Gary Oldman come out, and this guy is just brimming full of characters. Like,
No one will ever know what his actual voice is, by the way.
No.
Is he using a fake voice when he regularly speaks, or is
he,
like,
actually... I thought he was a
actually...
Cockney. And then he comes out, Gary Oldman here. I am.
It's such a funny night.
And he's a genuinely terrifying man.
These people, though, that do talk about how their movies and their performances change lives. Like, have you ever walked out of a theater a different man than when you walked in?
Oh, when I saw, and I've said this before, when I saw Control, mm-hmm. I wept at the end of Control and thought, I've done nothing with my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's the story of Joy Division and Ian Curtis. That made me weep.
Yeah.
That was, but like, yeah, so, you know what? When I came out of our documentary film, They Shall Not Grow Old, that made me think about things.
Mm-hmm.
But it's rare enough, let's be honest. Like, and I love The Godfather, but it's rare I come out of it and think, I gotta be more spiteful to my enemies.
Yeah. I saw In the Army Now with Pauly Shore. I went straight away and enlisted right afterwards. Hey, this was fun, my friend. We'll be back midweek to look at some of the Premier League games that go on. And, of course, we got to get you ready for MLS because it's back, baby. So we'll do all of that. Look for that podcast sometime Wednesday evening. Hey, to you I say...
Take you later, fun boy.
I'll see
you.
I just want to say goodbye.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.